You're listening to the Script Lab Podcast. I'm Shani Edwards.
In this episode, I chat with Bridget Savage Cole and Danielle Crudy, who both wrote and directed the new film Blow the Man Down. The film is about two sisters who live on the eastern seaboard and attempt to cover up a gruesome run-in with a dangerous man. To conceal their crime, the sisters must go deep into the criminal underbelly of their hometown, uncovering the town's darkest secrets. Despite the serious nature of this murder mystery, Bridget and Crudy, as Bridget calls Danielle, are a couple of firecrackers and love to joke around. We talk about the long process of writing this script, how they trimmed it to save money during production, and how finding someone to be executive producer could be the key to getting your independent film made. As a side note, I just want to say I hope everybody listening is safe and healthy, and just know that together we're going to get through these crazy times. All right, let's hear a clip from Blow the Man Down that will be available on Amazon so you can watch it while you shelter in place. March 20th. Here's a clip.
On a New England isle, in a good seaport town,
Tommy
away, hey, blow the man down.
Can you start over? I'm confused.
It was confusing.
But you had to do it right.
Oh no. I lost control. With a brick.
You said it was a harpoon.
So what are we gonna do now?
I should have just called the police.
Hello?
Priscilla Conley?
You have a small skiff, right?
Could get a little grody. A body wash up on the rocks.
Enid's business is bringing shame to the town.
I try to protect these girls, but I can't do everything.
What did she mean by that?
It used to be real bad around here.
Get away from me!
If it's not Enid's girls, then it's our own daughters. We wanted something better for you.
By starting up.
Go on, drink up. Drink up.
Hi, ladies.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
I really enjoyed this movie. I can't wait to talk about it, but first I would love to know a little bit about your background, how you became filmmakers, how you came to know each other.
Well, picture Coney Island in like the...
I was almost at 1993.
That would age us. I was like, no, definitely not that long ago.
It was 2013, Coney Island.
Yeah.
It
was earlier than that.
Oh, man.
2009. Anyway, I was a quote-unquote DP for a music video, and Crudy was my AC. We had both gone to college together, but we didn't really bond until that shoot. It was like a couple years after.
Yeah, that was the shoot of the bonding.
It was a long car ride. and then we, you know,
it was like, oh, you like cameras, I like cameras too. Oh, cool.
Yeah, there weren't that many camera chicks in the camera department at the time. Like, really, I really, it wasn't 93.
I'm just joking.
It's really like... 1893.
Yeah, 1893. That's what we meant.
Yeah.
So it was different then. It just still felt like, even now when we go on sets, there's so many more women, especially in the camera department. It is like, it was refreshing to meet another woman who had like a cinema lust. And like
we were like pretty intense. We would just be like pep talk each other to death. Yeah. It was like a cycle of pep talk.
Like, can I hear some of your pep talking?
A cycle.
Okay, let me imitate Crudy.
Okay.
Just like, dude, you are making it. You're doing it. You have to go out there. You know, you're like getting stuff done, and you just gotta like, you just keep making more cool shit, man.
Yeah. It's like, gosh, whew, it really took me back. Yeah, it was a lot of car rides.
I was like an unwarranted, and unsolicited pep talk.
Yeah, it was unsolicited. But you know what? Hey.
I loved it, though.
Hey,
and then I was like, I love this chick.
It.
Crudy was so cool. She had like a buzzed head and a tool belt. And I was like, this girl, badass.
Still wear the tool belt sometimes in private. No. It was just like, yeah. And like, Bridget had been making stuff. And I was kind of like, hey, dude, I've been knowing you making stuff for a while. I'm tracking you. I've been watching your stuff. And he was like, pretty cool. So, like, could you teach me? Okay, could we hang out?
Yeah.
And where did you go to college?
We went to Wesleyan University.
And you studied film?
I was a film studies student.
I was all over the place. I started, like, pre-med, and then I was... And then I became a dance major, and then I dropped the dance major and somehow graduated a history, American Studies major.
Cool.
That's the end of the story. Yeah. I great. Just like didn't really know. I didn't know what a filmmaking, like I didn't know that was a job. I remember.
Neither did I. I was like, I didn't think there was a job at the end of this necessarily. Wait, I mean, you don't go to film studies before the job.
But Crudy's so cute. She wrote her eighth grade paper on Steven Spielberg.
Montessori. I was like, okay, eighth grade speech on Steven Spielberg.
You guys are funny. Very different sort of vibe than the film.
Interesting.
Oh, we can bring.
Do you want
we
salty?
Can bring, I was like, salty, dark, dark. You want her to come out? We have names for them. Esmeralda.
What? That's just her PMS names.
Yeah, but I'm like, they're salty and dark. So it's like Esmeralda and
Tina.
Tina.
No, Tina's just what you call your
Tina,
period.
Yeah.
You're
Tina,
like, damn it, Tina.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is it? It's Marina. It's Marina, oh, Marina. And Esmeralda.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, we can bring them.
Our art bitch alter egos.
Yeah, art bitch alter egos. Hashtag.
Yeah, you're hashtag like, I didn't, she's like, I didn't know I was getting dumb and dumber.
No. Sorry, we're a little slap happy.
Yeah,
it's our
sorry.
Slap happy hour.
Press does that to you. It's all day intense.
Come back when we've crashed and you'll really see us.
Well, the thing that I loved so much about Blow the Man Down is that it's a generational story about women. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the inspiration for that.
Yeah. We originally started writing about the sisters because we both have sisters. And we were sort of populating the fantasy town of Easter Cove, which isn't a real place. We just made it up. But, you know, as we sort of developed these older women characters and they started to kind of reveal themselves, they really was like, it was sort of a no-brainer. Oh, these are also at the center of the tale and how much you could enrich the story of the young women with the tale of the older women and then having them, like, converge.
And because we wrote the movie over several years, because we started it, it was one of the first like feature collaborations that we ever did as writers together, and we had day jobs, we wrote other scripts, we just kept coming back to it over years, and so we really kind of talk about how we feel like we grew up making that movie, and we actually changed our attitude towards our mother's generation.
Really?
I really feel like that, I think it's also just the nature of that age, too. You know, we because we grew up wanting to be these tough chicks and, like, survive in these, you know, male fields, we had kind of, like, pushed down a lot of these, like, feminine traits and also pushed, you know, dismissed the past of our mother's generation and stuff. We wanted to be career bitches, you know? And then to... like sit down and like take a second look and say like, well, why am I writing this off or why am I underestimating them? Like they really are powerful. And you know, when stuff goes down, when things go wrong, you know, when there's a death, when there's somebody sick, it's like, who knows what to do, you know? And you see what happens and who's showing up and who's like coming in and like understands like what crisis modes need. And I just feel like witnessing that and growing up and sort of understanding like, there's just so much more like potent, like there's so much more agency with women that even if you don't even know they're influencing you, you know, and also we have a whole other layer of that, like knowledge. I feel like when we actually made the movie, like the actual matriarchs of Maine are a trip and you would like meet this really tough fisherman and he would talk a big talk and yeah, you can use this location, da 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 da. The next day, actually, can you talk to my wife?
Yeah.
And
are you serious?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like that was a direct quote. I mean, and we really didn't have the maturity, you know, when we started writing this to appreciate. Yeah, it was our own like finding a more mature way of seeing the world and how important the social glue is and feeling it of our own lives.
We both were raised up with a lot of like manners, you know, like that you had to write thank you notes, and I hated writing thank you notes.
I hated it.
Bugged me that, guys never had to write thank you notes. How come girls have to write thank you notes? You know, or like, how come girls have to get up and help with the dishes? But yeah, the guys are kind of all sitting on the couch and like, what's going on? And that's not fair.
And it felt weird because I didn't even know that guys didn't learn how to write thank you notes until later in life because I had two sisters.
Yeah, totally.
And it was like, what?
And I'm sure there's some guys who write thank you notes, but
like, if like,
don't send me any emails
about
it. Yeah. I'm a guy and I write thank you notes.
Yeah. Okay,
but
the character Priscilla is us exploring that. You're like, the same part of her that makes her so dutiful about writing a thank you note is the part of her that's going to show up and cover up this crime for her sister, because that's how strong the loyalties are. They're a lot stronger than the law. You know, it's really like this social glue and this family glue and this network of community. Mm-hmm. And like, that is the things that hold the community together. And we wanted to relook at those and as potent. And relook at like the parlor where our like female relatives are chatting and see that, oh, maybe some serious stuff is being decided. So that's what this movie ends up. The movie kind of tells you what it wants to be. Mm-hmm. And this movie really wanted to explore that.
And ending up seeing, like, also think the tale of the sisters, you know, that they do this bad thing. You know, I think we wanted to kind of reflect that through a prism in this older generation with the sort of spoiler brothel, you know, storyline, which I think it was really important to us to have where, yes, sometimes you do bad things and you justify them. And then how could that story feel like valid with the sisters, and then also through the older women's storyline actually shed a light on like some choices that should have maybe been thought through differently, and the way that the women have like accepted, you know, certain standards in the town, and then this chance to revise history, basically.
The one thing I related to personally was, so we sort of learned that their mother has passed, and my mom passed 2 years ago, and people tell you stuff about her. There's stuff they wouldn't have told you while she was alive.
Whoa.
But they'll tell you now that she's gone. And I was like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
That felt very real to me.
Yeah.
And I loved how the girls were so young, my mother wouldn't have put a bottle of whiskey in her boot? Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, maybe she would have.
Yeah, like, yeah. Exactly. And that can happen, whether your mom's, I think, alive or if she's passed away, just like seeing your mother as a 3D
human. We see them as extensions of ourselves because they do serve, you know? Like, they provide this role for you, and to really be able to look at them as people and, like, who are, like, naughty and have made mistakes and have been selfish and have had agency. And, you know, I think it's important for us to do that.
It's also, that's also, I think, a radical way of seeing things because actually culture wants to see, I think, also, you know, it's encouraged is, like, more streamlined, like, cliche type, like types, you know, where there isn't like a deeper story to unpack of like a housewife type, you know. So even pushing towards like, wow, this person has like a deeper personal history, a 3D background, feels like a wow. It's pushing beyond what people expect.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and I won't reveal the ending at all, but it was a jaw-dropper. Like, I had to rewind and take a look at it a few times, and then I had to go back and look at some things, and I was like, oh, my, you blew my mind, so well done.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk about the script. You said you wrote it over a few years.
Yeah.
What was the biggest challenge with telling the story?
There were a lot of characters. We actually did compress, you know, the trio of like Susie, Dorian, and Gail. There was like another sort of fisherwoman who worked at the fish shop. She got kind of like compressed into Dorian. So it was like compressing. And then what we did over so many years is we built this story world and we kind of like set the atmosphere and got like the tone like sort of shaped in our heads. And then pretty late in the process, we kind of gutted the script and redid the plot pieces to make sure they really were mechanically working from scene to scene. Just because the world had been 3D, but and we had all, you know, it's a big cast for still a pretty small movie, and wanting to make sure that, you know, we were finding the right balance with the storytelling.
We did a lot of rewrites for financial reasons to make sure that we could shoot make our day. And we had, you know, we would combine scenes to so that we could shoot it in two shots, because we knew we'd only have two shots, you know. So it's like, it was kind of crazy. I mean, that really is a lot, how a lot of decision making were made. But then it's weird. It forces you to really think, what do you actually need, you know? And sometimes you're like, you really didn't need it, and it made it better. And then sometimes you're like doing the reshoot of that weird shot you cut
that you knew was a bad thing.
You're like, well.
Saw that coming.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, so that was, I don't know. I mean, I think we actually kind of learned how to write over the course of the script, too, because we were, you know, going to other projects, writing stuff, coming back to it. You know, there's no quick way to learn how to write a screenplay. There's only one way, and it's the long way, which is just doing it, messing it up, redoing it.
And refining. It's refining, refining, because, like, once you kind of have, like, a theme, like, in, you know, you're sort of circling, it's just, like, how to bring that out in every single scene and how to feel like that dramatic conflict is really, like,
that you're never losing the thread.
Yeah, so, and also just, like, making a good ending.
I mean, this type of movie needs a good ending. It needs a reveal.
Yeah.
Right. And it's delicious.
Cool.
You know, it's what you sit there and it's what you sit through the movie for, you know?
Yeah.
So I know this is going to be available on Amazon.
March 20th.
March 20th. Yep. Mm-hmm. But you didn't develop it with Amazon. Tell me about
that. They acquired it after Tribeca.
Tribeca. Yeah. So how did you manage to get the financing and all of that?
God, it was like 2 years of meetings that led to more meetings that led to other meetings. And we had a lot of advocates, you know, we're kind of slowly accumulating allies and advocates. But eventually we connected with, you know, at some point CAA was helping us. And then
big shout out to Secret Engine.
Secret Engine.
The producers in New York. Yeah, Drew Haupt, Alex Sharfman, Lucas Joaquin.
They connected us with Tango Entertainment. And specifically Leah Booman, who is became a real advocate. She works at Tango Entertainment, which is a financing company. And it really took her becoming an advocate for the film, because even though we had a great cast and a great script, it still was a lot of radio silence waiting for money.
But that was also like years. I mean, we were like pounding the pavement, and you know, the only like meetings that led to more meetings sounds passive. It was not a passive process. I mean, you're like every day you're like putting a stake in the ground and like hammering it. I mean, it really was like more banging down doors, I would say. It's, you know, you're going to find people who will hopefully be open to introducing you to the next person who hopefully can help you. And you're like on this track, and that's a very like Hollywood way of things working, where you have to like triangulate relationships, because people want to, want to support, but they also need, you know, you need a lot of different kinds of support. So finding people who could like come together and connect over the project and
vouch for you.
Yes, and vouch for you.
You know, that there's this, another person vouching for you when they hear about this. And
yes.
You know, we didn't have like, both of us are from small towns. We didn't come to LA feeling super connected, but you know, I give Crudy a lot of credit because she worked in development, and just like all so many of the people you meet along the years.
A lot of people came through
and helped.
You know,
Well, that's great to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your peers that end up helping you most.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of my listeners have independent film scripts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What advice do you have for them if they want to try and get their film made?
Okay, so there's this crazy balance of you want to wait till your script is ready. You want to put the best version forward. But then even after you put what you think is the best version forward, there's still going to be a lot more script work. So you have to kind of check in with yourself. Like, is it, you know, at some point we made a decision about the script with Blow the Man Down. Okay, now we're going to start having conversations.
About making it. It was a mental shift.
Yeah, not necessarily asking for, what do you think of this? Do you think we could do it? We're not asking for that from, you know, on like the, in our like forward action.
Yeah.
But we also really wanted to put a really good version out, and mm-hmm. we had to feel ready for that too. I mean, that yeah. took a really long time just to feel ready for that.
Yeah.
So I think like it's trying to find the best time for you to go out with it.
Yeah.
That you feel confident, and then also know that there's still going to be like a really long road.
And after. You don't know who's going to help you. It might be like your brother's lawyer. Like,
yeah,
it's just weird. You know, it's like, oh, my brother's lawyer went to law school with a guy who's in entertainment law. Do you want me to send? I've heard of people who like, you know, and then maybe yeah. that's not going to like finance your movie. It takes like a lot more than that, you know, but yeah. it's like that's those little weird starts sometimes help. And just working, you know, just telling everybody you meet and just working with working in development or in film in some tangential way really helps.
There's
my
no, like,
I had worked in commercials, and those connections didn't help at all.
Yeah. There's no magic yeah. wand, too. I mean, everything is like, there's, you know, you're never going to have this, like, we got it moment.
Yeah, there's no golden ticket.
You get these kind of, like, tiny checks. It's like the road to a short film is like a journal of tiny checks, like a yeah. million tiny checks. You're like, okay, I checked in with this person. I asked them about this. I got this email. You know, and you're just
one thing. Oh,
like yeah, kind of like it's a snowball that's mm-hmm. kind of like skating,
slowly gains
slow
momentum. And one thing I didn't know about was you find yourself with some like distant connection to some hotshot producer, but they're too big. They're not gonna do your movie. But maybe they'll EP it, and that's like a cool way. If you can figure out, like, ask somebody like a bigger name to EP something, mm-hmm. means they're adding their name and vouching for it, but they're not going to actually do the work of making it, you know. And then you kind of have that as like a little check in your box, and then you take that name that you have attached, and now you're slowly like building legitimacy for your project.
Yeah.
Because that's the, you know, that's the thing. It's a fear. It's a risk averse industry.
Yeah.
So the more little check, you know, little legitimacy checks you get on there.
Yeah.
Sure. So
yeah.
What's next?
Well,
we're doing a movie with Amazon.
Yeah, we are writing another movie that we're gonna do with Amazon.
Yay!
Yeah.
Can you tell me anything?
I think we'll keep it vague.
Yeah.
And just say it's a psychological thriller.
Yeah. Okay. we can say, yeah.
I'm like, I don't know.
No, maybe not yet.
Yeah.
We haven't come out of the closet yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Well, I wish you the best of luck with Blow the Man Down. You guys can see it on Amazon coming up. And wish you the best of luck with the next movie.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much.
It is a pleasure to chat with you. And you're the first person to ever talk about their period on my podcast.
And hopefully not the last.
And not the last. They happen. We're women
periods,
directors.
They happen. And they don't stop when you're in production. Yes, that's for sure.
Okay, that's a whole other podcast. That's a whole separate podcast.
Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks.